I'll start out by reading this. And again, we have to realize that this is internal stuff. This is internal stuff. Got to keep reminding ourselves to quit looking out outside. It's so easy for us to read this, and in one breath we'll say something spiritual, and the next breath we'll speak something external again and get it outside. We have to watch it. It's easy to do, and anyone's capable of doing it. So we got to really focus to make sure we get what we need to get out of this. Okay, chapter 1 says, "Now will I sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. My well-beloved has a vineyard in a very fruitful hill. And he fenced it and gathered out the stones thereof and planted it with the choicest vine and built a tower in the midst of it and also a wine press therein. And he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. And now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the heads thereof, and it shall be eaten up, and break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down. I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned nor digged, but there shall come up briars and thorns. I will also command the clouds and they rain no rain upon it. Because for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah is his pleasant plant. And he looked for judgment, but behold oppression, for righteousness, but behold a cry. Woe to them that join house to house and lay field to field, till there be no place that they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. In my ears, saith the Lord of hosts, of a truth many houses shall be desolate, even great and fair, without inhabitant. Yea, 10 acres of vineyard shall yield one bath, and the seed of an omer shall yield an ephah. Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they follow strong drink, and that continue until night, till wine inflame them. And the harp and the violin and the tabouret and the pipe and the wine are in their feasts, but they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of his hands. Therefore my people are gone into captivity because they have no knowledge, and their honorable men are famished, and their multitude dried up with thirst. Therefore hell hath enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure, and their glory and their multitude and their pomp, and he that rejoices shall descend into it. And the mean man shall be brought down, and the mighty man shall be humbled, and the eyes of the lofty shall be humbled. But the Lord of hosts shall be exalted in judgment, and God that is holy shall be sanctioned or sanctified in righteousness. Then shall the lambs feed after their manner, and the waste places of the fat ones shall strangers eat. Woe unto them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity, and a sin as it were with a cart rope, that say, let him make speed and hasten his work, that we may see, and let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw nigh and come, that we may know it. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe unto them that are mighty in drink to drink wine, and men to have strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Therefore, as the fire devours the stubble and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness, and their blossoms shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Therefore is the anger of the Lord kindled against his people, and he has stretched forth his hand against them and has smitten them. And the hills did tremble, and their carcasses were torn in the midst of the streets. For all this his anger is not turned away, but his hand is outstretched still. And he will lift up an ensign to the nations from afar, and will hiss to them from the end of the earth, and behold, they shall come with speed swiftly. None shall be weary or stumble among them, none shall slumber nor sleep, neither shall the girdle of their loins be loosed, nor the latchet of their shoes be broken. Whose arrows are sharp, and all their bows are bent, their horses' hoofs shall be counted like flint, and their wheels like a whirlwind. Their roaring shall be like a lion, They shall roar like young lions, yea, they shall roar and lay hold of the prey, and shall carry it away safe, and none shall deliver it. And in that day they shall roar against them like the roaring of the sea. And if one look into the land, behold darkness and sorrow, and the light is darkened in the heavens thereof. Boy, this has got a bunch of junk in it. I wouldn't say junk. I'm just saying King James Version is really twisted. Okay? It's not what God's saying, and I want to try to clarify some of this morning. There's a whole bunch of stuff here that needs to be brought out. We go back to the first verse, and he says, now. So when is God speaking to us? Now God's speaking to you. You're listening? God's talking to you. I will sing to my well-beloved. Who is his well-beloved? It's you. It's the Christ within you. Okay? A song of my beloved concerning, okay, concerning his vineyard. What's his vineyard? It's his church. It's his bride. My well-beloved has a vineyard and a very fruitful hill, Mount Zion, okay? And he fenced it. What does that mean?
He put a hedge around that.
Yeah.
That garden.
He put a place around it, it protected it, right? And gathered out the stones of thereof. And when it says fenced, it actually leads you down the wrong path. It doesn't really say he fenced it, it says he grubbed it. What's grubbing it mean?
Dug it out.
He dug the roots and the rocks and the sticks and all the imperfections out of the soil so that it would be good for the seed, right?
Dug out the imperfections.
He prepared the soil. Would you take that?
Okay.
He prepared the soil, and he said, and gathered out the stones thereof. So he got the hard things out of it, the inconsistencies and the hard-headedness and stiff-neckedness out of us. He got it. And we're the ones he's talking about, isn't he? And he planted it with the choicest vine. That was the Christ, the seed of Christ, the seed of God. And he built a tower in the midst of it. Didn't it say that God is our high tower? And they that love him will run into it for protection? It says that. I'll let it go with that. Also, he made a wine press, or a wine vat within. And what is that wine vat? It's not a wine press, but it's a wine vat. What does a wine vat do? It holds the wine in preparation, okay? See, we're not talking about a wine press that prepares it, because that's what King James says. That's not what the language says. It stores the vine. That. So what would you think that would be?
Get ready for the revelation.
It's the mind, see? He stored it up. Doesn't it say that he wrote it in our heart before the foundation of the world? He prepared us, chose us before the foundation of the world, right? And he put all this in. And he looked... Right, he looked, or he expected it to. It should bring forth grapes, right? And the grapes are good stuff. And it brought forth what? Wild grapes, which is poisonous, stinking berries. Now, I want to take you back to Deuteronomy 32:32, just for a moment. Deuteronomy 32:32, and show you there's another reference to this. And I'll read verse 31-32. It says, for their rock is not as our rock, even our enemies themselves being judges. For their vine is the vine of Sodom and of the fields of Gomorrah, and their grapes are grapes of gall. Their clusters are bitter. Their wine is the poison of dragons and the cruel venom of asps. Is not this laid up in store with me and sealed up with among my treasures? He's saying, that's what he's talking about, the same thing. The venom and the poisonous stinking berries, the bad, nasty stuff that they're bringing out of them, it shouldn't be there, should it?
The carnal mind.
It's absolutely the carnal mind. And he says, and now, O inhabitants, in verse 3, of Jerusalem and Judah, that's the overcoming people, judge, I pray you, and the word I pray you should be now. Judge now between me, and it should be in the midst of me and my vineyard. Between me and my vineyard. This thing that's in the midst of you, judge between that and my vineyard. Are you wanting the poisonous stinking berries, or are you wanting the good wine? Which one are you wanting? And what is his vineyard? It's his bride. Do you want man's way of doing it, or do you want God? It's a really simple question, isn't it? And most people say, oh, they'll say God, but when it comes down to it, they still want to hold on to their way of doing everything rather than listening to what God has to say and doing it His way. And His name is Yahweh, not your way. Right? Look at verse 4. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done to it? Why, when I expected that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth stinking poisonous berries? Why did it bring the wrong thing when I expected to bring the other thing? Because of rebellion. Because of the stiff-necked hard-headedness of humanity. And believe me, the church is just as bad as anybody else, isn't it?
It's part of humanity.
Well, it's the worst part of it, probably. He said, now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my... Now see, there ain't no devil doing this, is there? God said, look what I am going to do to my vineyard. This is not destruction. This is correction. I chastise or correct those I love, Hebrews, right? He said, I'll tell you what I will do. I will take away the hedge, the protection thereof. A hedge is a protection. And it shall be consumed. The vineyard is going to get eat up by everybody else. And break down the wall thereof. There's the protection, the wall. And it shall be trodden down. Right now, didn't it say that the outer court was turned over to the Gentiles in Revelation to be trodden underfoot? There's no more outer court. It's all over. See? And I will lay it waste. He didn't say some devil was going to do it, did he? God said, I will lay it waste. And it shall not be pruned or trimmed. And you know, if you got a vineyard, you ever go to a vineyard, you ever see them people, they're working on it all the time. They're walking these big rows of vines and they're pruning them little limbs off, them little vines, branches off, and it makes it produce more fruit, doesn't it? God says, I'm not going to prune you, and I'm not going to hoe you, or I'm not going to cultivate you to get the weeds out, but there shall come up briars and thorns. Briars and thorns come from Genesis, where Adam was cursed. The ground was cursed for his sake. There's your laws first mentioned. So when the briars and thorns are mentioned, it's talking about curses. Okay? And I will command the clouds. Who's the clouds?
Overcomers.
We're not talking about them puffy white things in the sky. Those are the symbol of the reality of white righteous people carrying rain. Clouds carry rain, don't they? They carry moisture, anointing, or revelation of the word, or the word itself. And he said, I'm going to command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it. So there's no rain, no word coming, right? What do you think in the Old Testament talked about these times with no rain? Even in the times of Noah, when they went for 400 years with no rain. What he was saying was there was no one speaking the word. Don't you realize God had that set up? That there was no one coming to speak the word, the truth? Verse 7, because the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel. That tells you who it is. It's the church. And the men of Judah, his pleasant plant. And he looked for or expected justice, not judgment, but justice. But behold, he saw oppression, which is literally slaughter and bloodshed, for righteousness. But behold, for righteousness, he looked for righteousness, behold, an outcry. He was looking for righteousness from his church, and yet they were just as wicked as the world was. And it's the same thing going today. There's no difference in this. And look at verse 8. Woe to them that join house to house and lay field to field till there be no place that they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. Now, there's a whole bunch in this verse. I got to slow down here and break it down. But there are, let you know right now, there are six woes starting right here in this chapter. Six being the number of man. So there's six woes coming to humanity. And we'll get to them, I'll point them out to you as we come. This is number one. He said, woe to them that join house to house and lay field to field. Now join house to house, we know that that's united. In the church realm, that's united this organization, United Baptist, Methodist, whatever, you know. They all join together, and if this church starts to fall down, they take money from these others and pump it back up because they don't want no one to see them fall down. They're trying to support themselves rather than letting God do what He wants. And lay field to field. What did the field represent in biblical days?
Their money.
Their finances, right. So they lay their money together so they can say, just like the Catholic Church is one of the wealthiest organizations in the world today. Mormons, same way. They're one of the most wealthy, probably the second most wealthy organization in the world. They're gathering all this money up, and they're letting people die of starvation and disease, and they got billions of dollars rat-holed. Something's wrong with that picture, isn't it? But now we have to look inside ourselves. We can go outside and slam the churches, but that's not the issue. I need to look at myself. Where it says, woe to them that join house to house. What is this right here I'm sitting in? My vessel, my body is my house. See, this is called the house of the Lord, isn't it? So, know you not that you're the tabernacle of the living God? So your body is your house, right? And when we think we have to join together for strength, our strength is within us, isn't it? It's not about joining a whole bunch of people together so we can say we're right because we got the most people. That's not what it's about. And it's not about bringing our money together so we can outbid somebody else in something or say we got more money than anybody else. That's one thing I always hated in these denominational churches. You go out there and they got a sign in the church right up front where you can see it to put condemnation and guilt on you. Look how much money we got last week, and look how many people was here Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesdays. You know, they all have them little boards up there to show you to bring condemnation if there wasn't enough money, and if there was plenty of money, it was to brag about it. You know, shouldn't be up there. That's not even should be concerned with it. And here's a key that nobody pays attention to. Till there be no place that they may be placed alone or dwell alone in the midst of the earth. How can I dwell alone if I'm locked up with somebody all the time? Nothing wrong with being fell with having fellowship. That's a wonderful thing. That's part of it. But locked up thinking we got to be exactly the same, do everything the same, you got to think for yourself, don't you? God gave us all a brain, and He never put any USB ports on the side of your head. So you can't plug them together and work them as one. You can't network your brain. The only way you can hook up with God is internally. So there's no USB ports on the side of your head for a reason. Okay, verse 9. In my ears, say the Lord of hosts, of a truth, many houses shall be desolate, even the great and fair, without inhabitant. See, many houses shall be desolate, even the great and fair. Now, most people would want to say, this is the church. And in that realm of understanding, you could see that and say, yep, that's right. But I'm telling you, of a truth, this is the house. Even the great men and women of this earth will be desolate, even great and fair without inhabitant. And the inhabitant they're talking about is God dwelling in the house. He's not openly dwelling in the house. He's there, I guarantee you. But He hasn't came to fruition yet. He hasn't been arose. What am I saying? I'm trying to think of a word there. He hasn't been awakened in them yet. And He goes on to say in verse 10, 10 acres of vineyard shall yield one bath, and the seed of an omer shall yield one ephah. 10 acres shall yield one bath. 10 and 1 is the key numbers here. What's 1 out of 10?
1 10.
That's a tithe, isn't it? And the seed of an omer is 65 gallons, and an ephah is 9, and it's supposed to be about the same thing. It's still pointing right close to a tenth. The figures there all vary from whichever book you try to search out what those measurements are. You'll find a half a dozen different ones. So it's all pointing at a tenth or a tithe. Okay? Now, they take this as a negative, don't they? But I take it as a positive. Because it says, no matter what you do, it's only going to bring forth one tenth. There you go. There you go. It's the first fruit. So He says, no matter what man does, man can't reproduce anything that God doesn't want. And God says, I'm looking for a tithe from the earth. Did He not? When He said He wanted a tithe from the earth, He's not looking for fruits and vegetables growing from the earth. He's looking from Himself that He planted right there in that first hill. First verse there in chapter 5. Where He planted this, He had this vineyard on a fruitful hill. And He's looking for a tithe from that. He's looking for a tenth coming back. And He said that's all it's going to yield. No matter what people try to do in churches, I don't care what they try to do, they're not going to produce anything except what God wants to be produced. Their work will just be vapors. Don't mean nothing. So here comes woe two. Unto them that rise up early in the woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that they continue into night until wine inflame them. Now look at here's woe, pain, grief, and suffering to them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink. Strong drink is not a good thing. Strong drink is not for king, and wine is not for princes, according to the book. And it says they follow it, that they continue until night. What is night?
Time of ignorance.
It's what?
Time of darkness.
Darkness, or ignorance. You stay at this stuff long enough, and you're going to, I used to call it liquid brain remover. It kills cells in your brain. Doctors prove that. That's a scientific fact. It works on your brain. So you continue with this strong drink and wine, and you're going to take yourself into a time of darkness. You may get by with it for years, but eventually it's going to get you because God said so. You're going into a time of ignorance until that wine just inflames them and sets them on fire, and there's all kinds of problems. We just talked about it in Proverbs about it, you know, why did I get hurt for it? I was just minding my own business and somebody popped me, you know. Proverbs 28, I believe it is, about the wine and strong drink. Okay, it says verse 12, and the harp and the violin, the tabouret and the flute and the wine are in their feast. Look what they're saying. He's saying, here's how they worship. They got the harp, they got the violin, they got the tabouret, they got the flutes, they got the wine, they're all in their feast, but they regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of his hands. Do you know what the work of the Lord is?
The cross.
The cross. They've said sidestep the cross. And today there's probably 75% of Christianity don't believe that that's the only way to make it. They got another way, some other way. That's what they teach. Man teaches that. Yeah. They regard not the work of the Lord, neither consider the operation of his hands. What's his hands? Well, you could say apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastors, and teachers. You know, his ministry, his leadership that he has to work. They don't consider the operation of his hands. Not their own hands, but his hands. What his people are doing. Because they don't want to hear it. And he says, because of that, therefore, my people are gone into captivity. You know why the people are sitting in these denominational churches with chains around their ankles and can't leave? Because they won't consider the operation of God's hands and his work. They're listening to the doctrines and dogmas of men and women who've come up with a better idea, they think, than God had.
And they have a key to set themselves free.
And they have the key, but they're afraid to use it. Because they have no knowledge, and there's the key right there. And that word knowledge here means discernment, wisdom, understanding, and perception. They have not these things. They have no discernment, they have no wisdom, they have no understanding, they have no perception. And their honorable men are famished. And that word famished, you know what it literally means? They lack God's word. So the ones that's leading them don't know what God's doing. So how are they going to teach anybody else? Seed produces like kind, does it not? So if you got someone who's leading, who's dumber than a sled track, well then what are you going to produce? But a bunch of sled tracks. That's all you got. If you got someone who has no knowledge, then they can't give you any knowledge, can they?
Well, if in that case, in that knowledge, and I'm back to that verse 11 and 12 where they're intoxicated. They're intoxicated not with the revelation of God.
No.
They're intoxicated with man-made
doctrines. Revelation. Absolutely. Doctrines of man. Absolutely. And it said, and their multitude is dried up with thirst. What do you think that's saying?
They need the word.
They need the water of the word. They don't have it. They're dying of thirst. You know how many people are sitting in churches doing that? When Lois and I first began going to a little Methodist church, I was out ministering these little churches all over the country. And Lois was sitting in this church every day, every Sunday morning and every Wednesday and whatever Sunday evening. And guess what? I come home one day and she said, honey, I am dying. I'm starving to death. All they do is talk about getting saved. Well, if I was saved according to them, I was saved. Why do I got to hear the same thing every week? Give me something to eat.
Well, that's why you see them all changing. They keep moving around.
Yeah.
They don't know why.
They don't even have a clue. They have no change in their thinking process. They just sit there and waller.
And they're afraid to cry out like
yeah.
I did.
Because if you cry out, then you there's something wrong with you. Because
they cast me out.
Absolutely. They escort us both out.
It's confusing. How many times do you have to be saved?
Yeah.
I mean, if you did all the things that they say, if you do one wrong thing, does that wipe out one and you have to redo it again?
wipes out everything. Start over from scratch again every time you do something. See, and that's the condemnation. No one can live under that. Where's the grace and mercy? You know, where's the grace and mercy? They don't understand anything about grace and mercy.
Grace and mercy is not in that intoxicating drink they've been drinking.
Absolutely. So they don't understand. Like I say, if they're honorable men are famished and lack God's word, who in the world is going to have it? See?
They're limited and they're not permitted.
It's just a religious social club. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Just a and there's nothing wrong with a social club, but there's all kinds of social clubs you could belong to. It has nothing to do with false religion. Just have a club if you want to.
It's just not permitted to go on yet.
Yeah, God hasn't given the eyes or ears to go on. You're right. Look at verse 14. Therefore hell hath enlarged herself. Hell is not what the world teaches, church teaches. Hell is the grave. And the grave has enlarged herself and opened her mouth without measure, right? Without limits. And their glory and their multitude and their uproar, should say, not pomp, and he that rejoices shall descend into it. So if we want to play those kind of games, guess what? That's what we can do. We can go to the grave if we want to, carrying all this garbage with us, if that's what we want to do. Verse 15, and the common man, it should say, not the mean man, but the common man, shall be humbled, and the mighty man shall be humiliated. Not humbled, but humiliated. And the eyes of the arrogant shall be abased. So he's telling you that proud look from them upper class people is going to sure get shocked one of these days to think they're better than everybody else. But the Lord of hosts shall be exalted in justice. Not judgment, justice. And see, justice is getting what you deserve. And don't tell me that God's going to give somebody a punishment for something when he already paid the price for it. The justice is now not guilty. True or false? It's not guilty now because he paid the price. It's already taken care of. So the only way that God can judge us is not guilty. And that God is holy, and God that is holy shall be sanctified in what? It's the same meaning as judgment. The word judgment there to start with, which is justice. And the holy, and God that is holy shall be sanctified in justice. It's the same meaning, it's the same thing. Just they mistranslate the words. Verse 17, then shall the lambs feed in the pasture, and the waste places of the rich shall strangers eat. So it's saying the lambs, the beast will go and eat wherever he wants to. He won't be restricted because God's bringing justice. God's bringing justice. And the waste places of the rich shall strangers eat. They're just going to come in and take what they want whenever they need it. Verse 18, here comes woe number 3. Woe to them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity and sin as it were a cart rope. Pain, grief, and suffering to them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity and sin as it were a cart rope. You know how many people I know that's got cart ropes tied around them and they drag their sin with them everywhere they go?
Yeah.
A cart rope is just a big rope. And they make sure they can't lose their sin because that's their issue. They can always say, woe is me.
Don't cut it off.
Oh, Lord, don't take my sin. I've had people run from me and say, don't take my devil from me. Don't take my rapture from me. Don't take my hell from me. Don't take all these things from me because that's what I believed in. Well, if you believed a lie, why would you want to hold on to it? I've actually had people say it. Don't take my devil from me. Don't take my hell from me. Don't take my demons. I've had them say it to me. And like, whoa, can't believe somebody want to hang on to this stuff, but they do. That's their identity. That's where they've identified with. Verse 19, he says, they drag it around this big rope that say, let him make speed and hasten his work that we may see it. And let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw nigh and come that we may know it. He said, woe to you. You're still hanging on to your sin and you're saying, let God come hasten his work and show up with speed and let us know his counsel and everything. He said, it ain't going to work. He said, woe to you. The churches are full of people saying they can't wait for God to show up. And if God showed up, the church would look like a screen door with holes in it. They'd be running out the walls trying to get away from him. They have no idea what they're asking for. They're just saying those buzzwords that religion has taught them. But we got to watch that we don't do the same thing. We got to watch that we don't do the same thing. And we don't say, oh yeah, come on God. But then when God gets here, we lay around and murmur and complain and whine and cry. Wah, wah, wah. Hey, stand up and take it like a man. We're not ignorant about what's going on, are we? We know it's hard.
Sure hurts when you're punished.
Sure, chastised, corrected, chastised. Corrected. See, when you're corrected, yes, it hurts, but you know it's helping you in the long run. And I'm not going to complain about it because I do want that. So what good's it do me complaining? If, as long as I complain, I haven't learned anything, have I?
I'll just keep getting
it over and over and over until I learn to keep my mouth shut and accept what God has given me to go through. If I say I'm mature and then I turn around and say, woe is me, oh my life is hard, oh everybody hates me, whop, you didn't learn anything, did you? See, I know this, and here's something we got to understand. If we're going to walk in the kingdom of God in the way we're supposed to, and the only way you can do it is His way, is understand that what someone else thinks about you is none of your business. And know that God loves you, and it doesn't make any difference what anybody else thinks. Because they're not in control, are they? If you know that, everything will be fine, and you'll just let it run off your back like water off a duck's back.
Continuously eating pig food.
They'll continuously eat pig food. That's the ones he's talking about here, the ones that say woe unto them that hang on to their sin and everything. I actually had a guy one time tell me, he said, I like pig food. He did. I mean, he knew what we was talking about. And he said, it ain't so bad living out here. I'm having a pretty good time. I said, okay, go right ahead. That's all I can tell you. Enjoy your pig food. That's all I can tell you. And he's still eating pig food, far as I know. I don't know. That's okay. It's not my call, is it? And this would be woe number four, wouldn't it? Unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness or ignorance for illumination and illumination for darkness or ignorance, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter.
Confusion.
Upside down, aren't they? Isn't that what the church is doing today? All you got to do is certain churches is put enough money in and they'll say you're a good guy.
They're in the midst of confusion.
Well, sure they are. Sure they are. And we got to watch. There's been people showed up here before, and this one gentleman in particular, he said to me one time, he said, we need to go outside and talk. So after everybody left, we walked out. In fact, we walked clear out front there, in front of the house, and he was standing on the front porch, and he said, you know, if you can prove to me you're the man, I'll slip you about $300-$400 a week. I looked at him, and I said, I don't need your money. I said, if you don't know who I am, then what good's your money going to do? What it was, if I slip you $300-$400 a week, if you'll do what I tell you to do and do it the way I want it. I had a man in this town, and I think he's dead now, the realtor, the one that came to me. And he said, I've got a lot of property. I'll build you a big church and you can do the preaching. But there was another thing he didn't say, which was implied. And I'll take care of the money. You bring them in and I'll fleece them. He said, you've got revelation. He said, you can bring them in. You preach and I'll take care of the rest of it. That was the money end of it, because he was a money man. I told him, I don't need it. Don't need it. Don't need it. I've been tempted by a lot of them and it ain't going to work. I'm not for sale. Not for hire. I'm not a hireling. Woe number five, right? Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and wise in their own mind.
Fine.
Huh? It's pride, absolutely. In their eyes and in their mind, they're wise. And you know there's all kinds of them. I've had several of them of late to just pain, grief, and suffering. That's what that little word woe means. Whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 or all-inclusive, they're all pain, grief, and suffering out of it. That's the last one there, ain't it? 6 in verse 22. Woe to them that excel in drinking. Well, you know, there's a lot of people that think they excel in drinking. They think it's great because they can drink more than anybody else.
But isn't that their own revelation?
Well, they drink wine, but it's the wrong kind.
Well, what I'm saying is we were talking internally.
Yeah, and I understand, but I'm saying it's not God's revelation. They're drunk. They excel in drinking wine. They're drinking too much wine, and it's not God's wine. It's the intoxication of carnality. They're running in man's doctrines and everything, and they think they're so smart. Just like the arrogant guy right in front of it. And it says, and men of wealth to mingle strong drink. See, they put the money in there with the wine, and you've got everybody messed up. Do you know what the major downfalls of every man or woman of God in the Bible were? Two things?
Money.
Three things. There's three things.
Money, sex, and pride.
Absolutely. Money, sex, and pride. Ain't changed a bit, see? And those things are still right there today, no different than they were back in biblical days when this was written thousands of years ago. And it says, which justify the wicked for reward or a bribe, in verse 23. They still doing it, ain't they? They ain't changed nothing. See, humanity's never changed. The only thing that can change humanity is God. And when God comes alive in you, when God chooses to wake you up, you will change. There's no option. Just like our little cards that we hand out with our website and everything on it, change. See, when God gives you the change, there's no option. It's not say you can change if you want to. It's not a suggestion. It is what God said. It's His commandments. It's His laws. Which justify the wicked for a bribe and take away the justice of the just from him. They take away the justice from the just man. The people who deserve something don't get it because somebody with more money can bribe their way in. We see it every day of our lives, don't we? In every facet of our lives, we see people in positions that should not be there. They're unqualified, never been trained, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. But people, because of who they know or what they possess, get these positions. I know lots of them. Lots of them. Therefore, as the fire devours the stubble or the straw, and the flame consumes the dryness, the dry grass, so their root shall be as rottenness, and their blossom shall go up as dust. He's talking about the people who play around in religion and try to deceive everybody into thinking they're good people, and they're as rotten and dry as anybody else, okay? He said, everything they do is going to be burned up. And their root will be rotten, and their blossom will go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. And see, that's what's happened today. It's all about church doctrine now. And I've heard people say, well, that's not the way we teach it in our church, so I don't believe it, even if it's in the book. See? That's what they've done. They've cast away and despised the word of the Lord. Therefore, the anger of the Lord is kindled against his people, and he has stretched forth his hand against them and has smitten them, and the hills did tremble. What is a hill? Huh? It's people. Okay, it's elevated people. Hills are elevated above, right? It's elevated people, prideful people. They did tremble, and their carcasses, see, hills aren't carcasses, are they? It's people. And their carcasses were not torn, but they were filth or refuse in the midst of the streets. It means they just die and leave them lay. Okay? For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. It's not through with you. That's just the beginning of it. And he will lift up an ensign or a standard for the nations from afar. Nations, speaking of the minds, not countries. And will hiss to them at the ends of the earth, and behold, they shall come with speed swiftly. When God calls you, can you say no? Anybody believes they can say no is insane. If God wants you, you'll come. And it says he'll call you from the ends of the earth, no matter where you're at.
That's shown that you have ears to hear, because you know what that whistle
is. You hear him. You hear that hiss. You know it's time to come.
Yeah, mine, this says whistle.
Yeah. Yep. So whenever God makes the call, and you will hear it, because God will have created an ear for you, wouldn't he? Yeah. There's no way God's going to whistle for you or call for you if you don't have an ear to hear, is there?
I knew when I was little and my dad whistled, I knew he was serious.
Yep. And when you hear God whistle at you, you best be burning some shoe rubber. Okay, verse 27. None shall be weary or stumble among them. See, when God calls you, it says he calls you, he equips you, and he glorifies you, right? Don't have to worry about it. None shall be weary or stumble among them. That's the overcomers, the ones he calls. None shall slumber, nor sleep, neither shall the girdle of their loins be loosed, nor the laces of their shoes be broken. He prepares you, he equips you, doesn't he? You have nothing to worry about. You don't have to worry about anything. Whose arrows are sharp, and all their bows are bent. Their horses' hooves shall be counted like flint, and their chariot wheels like a whirlwind. They're going to come in with the power and the authority of God, is what he's saying. Like the power and the authority of God. Their roaring shall be like a lion. And who was the lion of the tribe of Judah? It was Christ Jesus, okay? And are we not of that same tribe? They shall roar like young lions. Young lions are very aggressive. Very aggressive. Yea, they shall roar and seize the prey and shall carry it away safe. So he didn't say carry it away, destroy it. They carried it away safe, and none shall deliver it. That's saying when God calls you and he sends you on a mission and you go get what you're sent to get, just like Jesus was sent on a mission, was he not? Yes. My word will not return void unto me, but it shall accomplish what it was sent there unto to do. Isaiah 65, I think, or 55. So when it's sent to do something, it's going to accomplish it. If we are the seed of Christ in us and God calls it forth, do you think that cannot produce what he calls it to do? That would be ludicrous to think that it wouldn't happen. If God calls it, it's going to come. It's going to come forth. And none shall deliver themselves or anybody else out of the way. If God calls you, do you think you can get away from God? You're kidding yourself. And in that day, what day? The day of the Lord. They shall roar against them like the roaring. Here's the carnality. Here's the religion. Here's not the world, but the religious of the world. Will roar against them like the roaring of the sea. See, the sea is humanity, isn't it? And that's telling you the religious of the day is multitude like the humanity. And if anyone look into the land, and what is the land? The flesh, okay, the flesh. What do you see in this fleshly thinking? Ignorance and death and sorrow. And the light or the Christ is darkened in the heavens thereof. When you look into the sea of humanity, all you're going to see is darkness and ignorance and death and sorrow, right?
He could have used another word, woe, there again.
He could have, yes, but he didn't. And he says, but then you're going to see darkness, ignorance, death, sorrow, and the Christ is darkened in the heavens thereof. So he's saying they haven't been called yet. He's behind the clouds. We're encompassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses. It's okay. But there's so much beautiful stuff in here. And all it is a confirmation over and over and over again of what he's saying to us. We don't have anything to worry about. Stay out of religion and everything will be fine. What's truth?
It's easier said than done.
Well, I understand. I didn't say easy. I just said stay out of religion. You'll be fine. He said, didn't Jesus say in Revelation, I would rather have you hot or cold, because if you're lukewarm, I'll vomit you out of my mouth. See? So stay out of religion. Everything will be fine. If you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, go on out in the world and do what you got to do.
He'll get you when he's ready.
When he's ready, he'll come get you. You don't have to warm anything up. He's got it figured out. Timing and everything.